see how many tries it takes before this actually projects. I'm back. Oh, okay. Well, I said you were giving me projected advice.
Okay. He's attacking you with a banana.
To your friend Bob.
Scientific problem. If you have a list of members of the team,
you can bring up Monty Python.
Okay, so I have the unenviable task of telling you about the future of something that doesn't really have a present. I could make this a very short talk and say, well, nobody knows. And if I knew the future of quantum gravity, I wouldn't be here giving a talk. I would be at home in my office quantizing gravity. But I don't. Since I don't know the future of quantum gravity, I can talk about it. We don't know, but we can guess at some themes that are likely to be, plausibly, to be important over the next few decades. And I'll give you some of my personal guesses. Some of these are old ideas, some of them are very new. Many of them may be wrong, but based on the history of the subject, they're all wrong, but we can still hope. Among the themes that I'll talk about are an old problem that has reemerged of issues of locality and non-locality in quantum gravity. The idea of holography, which I'll explain a little bit more. Maybe some surprisingly deep connections with elements of quantum physics, such as entanglement. Maybe dimensional reduction at very short distances, and maybe some kind of emergence, but if so, not in the simplistic way that this is often talked about. So let me start with, let me start with this old issue of locality. It is standard folklore in quantum gravity, which is actually correct, that quantum theory of gravity has no local observables, where by an observable, I mean an object that commutes with the constraints, or equivalently, an object that is invariant under space-time diffeomorphisms. Now, this is actually now a theorem. There's a very nice paper by Charles Torre that doesn't get cited as often as it should, that shows that there are no observables in a quantum theory of gravity built as spatial integrals of local functions of the Cauchy data. Now, this is very different from any other theory that we know how to quantize. And since everything we know about quantum field theory is about local quantum field theory with local observables, I think that many of the problems, many of the conceptual problems in quantum gravity can ultimately be traced back to this in some form. There, intuitively, the reason that there are no local observables is that diffeomorphisms are not the same as ordinary gauge transformations. In a gauge theory, there's no problem finding lots of local observables, but diffeomorphisms move points. And to have a local observable, an observable at a point, you have to be able to say what that point is. And you can't do that in terms of the point itself, and so you lose locality. There's another form of stating what's essentially the same issue that I learned from Dan Harlow, which is a physicist's version, which is that the issue is that gravity couples universally to everything, which means that you can't have something outside of gravity that you can use to label your points. So that's a problem, and it's one that we don't really know how to deal with, but there are some interesting ideas that will recur in the rest of this talk. The first of these ideas is what is these days called holography, or the holographic principle, although principle I think is maybe too strong a word. If you go back to Torrey's original argument, if you look carefully at the wording, it's that there are no local observables for a spatially closed universe. For an asymptotically flat space-time, we do have some nice observables. We have the ADM energy, ADM momentum. These are defined at infinity, where there is some extra structure. If we want to have more local versions of this, we know how to do this. If we can somehow specify a surface in the space-time, there are a set of observables associated to that surface, like the Brown-York quasi-local energy and momentum. In an asymptotically anti-de Sitter space, the ADS-CFT correspondence that I talked about briefly gives a very large set of observables defined at the boundary at infinity. And there, you really do have a naturally chosen surface, the boundary at infinity. And there is even proof by Don Maralf that the observables that you get at infinity in an asymptotically anti-de Sitter space are perturbatively around pure anti-de Sitter are a complete set. What all of these have in common is that the observables are not local, but they're associated with surfaces somehow. And this fits in with what we know about the behavior of black holes, where we know that the entropy of a black hole is proportional to the surface area, which suggests, again, although it doesn't prove, that the relevant degrees of freedom live on a surface, on the horizon, rather than being extensive, living in the full space-time. So one of the common themes that is most strongly expressed in the ADS-CFT correspondence, but that shows up in a number of other different contexts, is this idea that perhaps somehow we have to understand how to express the quantum theory in terms of observables associated with surfaces. This, of course, is not an answer. It's not even really a program. It's a suggestion of places to look. There are some obvious questions. Does this give you enough observables to reconstruct the space-time? How do you specify the surfaces that you are talking about? If you have more than one surface with associated observables, do they fit together consistently? And we don't have good answers to any of those questions. There's one other thing that I'll mention briefly in this context, which is probably unrelated, but there are some suggestive similarities, which is that in a general approach to understanding quantum mechanics, there's an interesting variation of the Everett relative state interpretation due to Eckel, who argues that the proper way to do quantum mechanics is to have a single wave function, but to take surfaces that split the universe into disjoint pieces and define the use those surfaces to define observers and define an observer's wave function as the wave function, for instance, outside of the surface, given information inside. Possibly these can fit together. There is another place that issues of locality and non-locality show up, which has to do, again, with some fundamental quantum mechanics, in this case with entanglement entropy. This is a set of ideas that are under actively being researched now and are starting, I can almost get away with saying that these are reasonably well developed, but only in the context of asymptotically empty de Sitter spaces. I'm going to be talking a lot about asymptotically empty de Sitter space here for a couple of reasons, partly because an awful lot of the people working on quantum gravity are working in asymptotically empty de Sitter space, well, in theories of asymptotically empty de Sitter space, because that is where a lot of the string theory community has moved, but also because the ADS-CFT correspondence gives us a particular formulation for a candidate for a theory of quantum gravity that is in some ways clearer than many others. And I would add that you don't have to be a string theorist to believe any of this, that from a relativist's point of view, the rationale for the ADS-CFT correspondence comes from this fact that you do have a large set of observables defined at infinity in asymptotically empty de Sitter space, independent of whether you think the real theory in the interior is string theory. So the story of entanglement here begins with a proposal by Ryu and Takayanagi, which was later generalized and made covariant by Takayanagi, Hubeni, and Ragamani, and then actually proven to be true in certain restricted context by Lukowitz and Malacena. So the idea is this. Start with an ordinary field theory on a sphere. For this drawing, it's a one sphere, it's just a circle. Divide that sphere into two pieces by just drawing some curve on it. Give a state of the field theory on that sphere, and then ask for the entanglement entropy between the field and the two regions separated by the curve. This is a quantum mechanically well-defined quantity. There are divergences that have to be regulated, but they're fairly simple divergences. It's reasonably well under control. The proposal by Ryu and Takayanagi is that a way to get the entanglement entropy between these two pieces is to take your sphere, stick it on as a boundary of a higher dimensional empty de Sitter space, more specifically as the boundary of a spatial slice of an empty de Sitter space that's two dimensions higher. Take the curve that you've drawn on that sphere to separate the regions, find the minimal surface in the empty de Sitter space that has that curve as the boundary, and then the entropy, the entanglement entropy, view on Takanunagi propose is given by the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy formula for a black hole. That is that it's the area of this minimal surface divided by 4 times the Planck area in n plus 2-dimensional anti de Sitter units. This seems to work. There are all sorts of subtleties. How do you know what the state is? How do you encode what the state is on the boundary? In the standard ADS-CFT correspondence, there's an association between that state and your choice of the geometry in the interior. Pure anti de Sitter space corresponds to a vacuum state. What is the field theory on the boundary? That again, in the ADS-CFT correspondence, corresponds to various choices of the interior geometry and topology. But these are all reasonably well defined. Again, not nearly as general as we would like, but you can do this. Now, this in itself is certainly not getting at fundamental issues of quantum gravity. It's just weird. But there is a proposal to reverse this argument, to use entanglement entropy to obtain a concept of locality and local observables in the interior. So the idea is this. Suppose that you want to locate a surface in the interior of this anti de Sitter space. And here I'm looking at a 2+1-dimensional example, so we're looking at a 2-dimensional time slice, and we want to locate a curve. Well, one thing you can do to define the location of the curve is just take a whole lot of minimal surfaces that are tangent to the curve and go out to the boundary of anti de Sitter space. According to Ryu Takanagi, each of those curves defines an entanglement entropy between two regions on the boundary. The idea is then to run this backwards to say that given a set of intervals and a set of entanglement entropies of this quantum field theory on the boundary, you can construct these curves and you can ask under what circumstances do they determine something that looks like a geometry in the interior. For instance, you can get points as limits by just shrinking this curve you're trying to specify down to a point. I didn't have a good diagram that I could steal of that, so I started with a curve. This conceivably allows you to take a quantum field theory, look at something fundamentally quantum mechanical about it, and from that construct an idea of locality and perhaps local observables in a quantum theory of gravity. This is a very new idea. It's like other things I'm talking about, it's likely to crash and burn, but it might not. It's different enough that it seems very interesting. Okay, next problem that may be pointing in interesting directions in quantum gravity is the black hole information loss paradox or problem. The problem simply stated is suppose you collapse a pure state to form a black hole, allow it to completely evaporate by Hawking radiation. If Hawking radiation is thermal, you have a process that has gone from a pure state to a mixed state. This is arguably not allowed in ordinary quantum mechanics. Now, there are all sorts of possible answers to this, but again, the suggestion from the ADS-CFT correspondence is that if you do this in an asymptotically empty de Sitter space, the evolution as seen at the boundary should be unitary all the way. So the recent emphasis on this question comes from a paper by Amps, Amiri, Muralf, Polshinsky, and Scully, who posed the question in, at least suggest a way of posing the question in a very simple way, which I have further simplified. Look at the production of Hawking radiation near the horizon. In the standard picture, you have a Hawking particle with positive energy relative to infinity going out to infinity, and a negative energy partner falling into the black hole and arriving in some quantum region that we don't know what's going on. And then later you have another pair, and so on. So if in the end you want, as many people do, although I know not everybody here does, you want the final state of these particles, these outgoing particles, to be a pure state, then it must be that there is some, that they're correlated, that there's an entanglement between, for instance, particle B and C. In general, it'll be much more complicated entanglement among a huge number of particles. On the other hand, for this to be the vacuum here, particle B has to be entangled with particle A. That's a basic feature of any quantum field theory vacuum. But in quantum mechanics, there's a monogamy of entanglement. B cannot be simultaneously entangled with A and C. So somehow, the entanglement has to get transferred from this pair to, say, this pair. But the problem is that the entanglement here is across a horizon. And so you are somehow doing this transfer between points that are not causally connected. This involves potentially a large amount of non-locality. There are quite possibly simpler answers to this, but this has again led people to think very hard about what kind of non-locality is required to make sense of Hawking evaporation. Okay, one quick comment about a direction that doesn't fit in with, in obvious way at least, with this issue of locality. There is evidence from a large number of different approaches to quantum gravity. I'm not going to just read these all aloud, but that at very short distances, space-time becomes effectively two-dimensional. As a single example, in the asymptotic safety scenario that I talked about, quantum fields in a renormalization group flow acquire anomalous dimensions, anomalous scalings. And if the theory is asymptotically safe, then the fields at high energies necessarily acquire scalings that match the scalings of a two-dimensional quantum field theory. So there is some possibility that quantum gravity at very short distances, a little above the Planck length, has at least an effective description as a two-dimensional quantum field theory. This would be wonderful. This is a theorist's heaven, because we know much more about two-dimensional quantum field theories than anything else. Finally, let me say a couple of words about emergence. So is quantum gravity emergent? And the answer is obviously yes and obviously no. Obviously yes in the sense that you have to quantize space-time, and a quantized space-time is not a classical space-time, and somehow we want at large distances to get back something like classical space-time. I've argued that the observables in quantum gravity are non-local. Somehow we have to get back locality at large distances. Obviously, no, at least in the way that most of the work in this area has been done, although I won't blame anybody in this room. There are other rooms in which I've been pointing fingers. Most of the work in this area has been done in the context of, let's assume that there's a space-time, or that there's a space, at least, or a time, at least, and stick in some fields and try to show that you mix these together properly, you get a graviton coming out or something like that. This is a really bad idea. It is bad because Lorentz invariance is tested to extremely high accuracy, but if your background is not already Lorentz invariant, this requires an extraordinary amount of decoupling of your final physical degrees of freedom from the background, and nobody has managed to show how to make that work in any reasonable sense. The principle of equivalence and the universality of gravitational coupling is not at all natural in typical emergent gravity scenarios, unless you have Lorentz invariance, in which case there are some quantum field theory results that suggest that universal coupling is natural. You need universal coupling not just of gravity, of your emergent gravity to matter, but of your emergent gravity to itself. This is a strong equivalence principle, that gravitational energy gravitates the same as any other energy. That forces you into a very, very particular kind of nonlinear self-interaction, which again is not at all natural if you're not starting from some sort of geometrical view. And then you need some sort of emergent diffeomorphism invariance, and the Weinberg-Witten theorem, which has been blamed for all sorts of different problems, what it really says is that you need exact diffeomorphism invariance emerging, that you need a theory in which the spin 2 field, the non-spin 2 components of the field decouple exactly. These are hard. If the space-time is discrete, you have this additional problem of what Faye Dauker has called radical non-locality, which is simply the observation that a point in a Lorentz invariant set of points in the space-time has an infinite number of causally connected points, so an infinite number of nearest neighbors, which is not all that natural if you're building up your space-time from points. So there's an obvious way to avoid all of those problems, which is to say that space-time itself is emergent. And that brings us back to the original question, because what, from my point of view, what space-time being emergent means is that we quantize gravity. So there are various models in which this might be seen to happen, ADS-CFT, maybe this emergence of space-time from entanglement of quantum fields, the causal set program, spin foams that Abhay recently just mentioned, and a particular variation of spin foams called group quantum field theory, in which the spin foams are just the Feynman diagrams of some field theory. But these, again, all have to still confront the same problem of how we get out approximate locality and local quantum field theory to the approximate, extraordinarily good approximation that we know that it holds. So, future of gravity, quantum gravity, I don't know. If you do, let me know.
So we'll reconvene at 5 o'clock in 23 minutes.
And that maybe about 4 or 5 times. But
those who want to pose questions should let me know. So Bob,
every time I ask a question,
through this here. Lee.
So you want?
Yosh. Are we doing no picture this year?
I haven't organized anything.
So some people already left. Sure.
Well, one person has, but anyway.
Yeah, we maybe should.
No picture this year? Yeah, well, I don't. No, that's outside of time, but we haven't had a picture yet.
Oh, I think we should do that here.
Do it right now, then.
Yeah, why don't we do it right now?
Okay. Philip, could you...
No, nothing to do with...
You're the chairman.
No, it's his job.
No, you're the chairman.
Let's assemble in 10 minutes outside and have our group picture taken.
In 10 minutes we assemble?
Yes, outside in front of the lodge.
Right.
So Nairsty's embarrassing, little twist that it didn't work out. They just got a prediction.
Well, there's also this dynamic that the flat is not stable.
Yeah.
So there was a strong theoretical basis for flat.
Kerr went there as a junior faculty member. Sexist. I don't know where Roy got his PhD, but he went to Texas Lake. He went first to Syracuse. He was with Josh for a while.
Oh, okay.
Because I had understood that you said that he was...
No, I said he's junior college.
Art graduate student.
No, junior college.
Okay. Okay,
we gotta go out and take pictures? Yes, sir.
So the staff wants to know which bed you're in so they can make up the other one.
I'm in the small one.
You're in the small one, okay.
I'm in the small one. I'm not that big. I figured let's...
Billy's kind of big, yeah.
Okay. One other question I had for you, and I forgot to ask you. Just with this event horizon telescope, there one is really looking at near field, right? I mean, near the horizon, not far away, very close to the horizon. Then, so one also verify that that is curved.
That just comes from differential expansion.
Therefore, then, I mean, for you go to look at multiple moments, then it's a near the horizon.
So there's obviously this problem of how do you modify curves to keep things reasonable, because it's either curve or it isn't. But they, on my last slide I didn't mention it. So you take sort of the curve, but you let them expand it up to some order. So it's not fully exact, but it's still valid, fairly close. And you let Q particle moment be its curve value plus epsilon.
So, but that's also a point.
And then, but what particle moment is actually happening?